B-Pod Studios.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
I was telling you about our next guest. He's a dear friend, and I've known him for a long, long, long time. He spent a he was with the Sixers for many, many, many years, and he lived that era. And he was, I know AI loved him. All the players have loved him throughout the years. He's a lovable Scotty Rego, former equipment manager for the Sixers. Scotty.
Anthony, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, my brother.
Good morning.
We were talking about this because, you know, you and I lived it. You lived it, you know, right there. And you were family, part of that whole family. During that whole run, did you get a chance to see the doc last night?
I did. I did see it. I thought it was really well done. It was pretty good. Nothing too new to those of us that were part of it, but maybe some new stuff to people that were not. But I got a chance to catch up with some of the guys, too. To talk to Aaron McKee today and Billy King and a couple of the other guys. It was pretty fun.
So what did you what I say to you, I mean, there's so many things to start. When I say to that whole era, right? Like, so let's take it from when he gets drafted, right? So Pat takes over and he gets drafted. There is a whole, remember, the Sixers were in the dark ages forever, right?
Yes.
And then here they go, and Bubba gets drafted. What was the first time when you met him? What was it like?
It was at his press conference, so you have a million people just trying to pull him in a lot of different directions. But once he knew who I was, he said, okay, you're the guy I'm coming to for all my stuff. And we smiled and we laughed. I said, I'll be your best friend. And then he had to go and do his interviews and everything else. But Pat created a culture that pulled the team up. He did it from the inside out. He created a whole organizational philosophy for the people that work there. So when the players came in, they saw something different than probably what they had seen before. And that started with him. It all started with Pat creating that culture to work there.
You know what's funny? I always remember, because Pat was brilliant at that. He wanted people to have pride in the Sixers. So if you worked there, he wanted you to have pride. And who was the dude from the Nets who we got in a trade? And he wore a Nets practice T-shirt. It was during practice, and he had a Nets shirt on. And Pat went nuts. Take that shirt off!
Pat, I don't remember who it was, but Pat went nuts on anyone. We had a team doctor come to training camp with an Eagles jacket on. And Pat went crazy on him because we're the Sixers.
Right.
You have to wear Sixers on your chest, and Pat said, I want you to be proud to wear it and walk around with pride. And damn right we were.
And it was funny because he saw Iverson and he knew he had this raw talent, raw in so many ways, right? Here's this, you know, what did Larry call him? The little kid, you know, the whole thing. And he knew that he was a bundle of energy and he was going to be, you know, uplifting and a headache at the same time.
He was a freak of nature. I would have loved to have seen. Could you imagine if Allen's rookie year, Larry Brown was his coach, his first coach?
Yeah.
Because his coach was Johnny Davis, didn't really have the respect of the guys in the locker room. We all know that. And he only lasted 1 year, so did the GM, Brad Greenberg. So here comes Larry. Now, Larry, you have to reel the guy in after he's been given the keys to the organization. That was the toughest part. Reeling him back in and trying to get him to see Larry's vision. And Larry had to see his vision, too. And it took a while, but they got there.
So give us some great AI stories. So I know you got a million of them. So, like, you know.
Sure.
I can only imagine. I mean, he was so insane.
We could do a podcast where we could have some more colorful language and stories. But
just use the word bleep and.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of beliefs, or your mother, fathers.
Perfect.
Well, you know, before 90%, if not more, of the home games, he would come in the equipment room and eat dinner. And he'd either bring it himself, or there'd be a knock. You know where the single doors where they do the press conferences now? that was not a press conference area back then. The single door is still there, but Ann Iverson would knock on the door, make sure my baby eats his dinner, and whatever she made for him, we always had hot sauce in the refrigerator. He had to have hot sauce on everything. And there was, remember, now we're going back to like, what, 2000s VHS tapes, okay? So we had a tape of, do you remember the show Martin?
Yes.
Martin Lawrence. So he did all these little characters. We had a tape. It was like a director's cut thing with the numbers on the bottom, scrolling the time, of the different characters Martin played throughout the episode. It would be like one 15-minute section on this character, one 15-minute section on that character. He would have us put the tape in every single game, watch it, laugh at the same things, put the hot sauce on his food, and eat his dinner. And sometimes we'd talk, sometimes we wouldn't, depending on the game and how he was doing, and just go through life. And then when he was done, he'd say, he would call me Scotty Reek. Okay, Scotty Reek, time to get these motherfathers.
Because I know everybody used to hang out with you. You were like a safe place for everybody.
You have to be a vault. You have to be part shrink. I mean, there's probably the job definitely prepared me for fatherhood. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a very, very superstitious guy. And the one thing is, you never knew what color sneakers he was going to wear. Now, back then, if you look at the sneakers back then compared to today, everyone had to wear the same color, or at least the rule was 51% of the dominant color. So if you saw a lot of white in his sneakers and black surroundings, I told Reebok, make the tongue a certain color, and that'll be the 1% I go back to the league with when they call and say his shoes are illegal. So I'd put out different colors of his combinations and the wristbands and the finger sleeves, and it all had to be set up the same way. He would know if something was out of order. And, you know, then we go back and forth. Okay, this is what I'm wearing. But the best, Anthony, was if he was launching a new shoe, Reebok would call me and say, hey, Allen's shoe's dropping tomorrow. We want him to wear the black ones. Well, then I had to get all the other guys that were playing to switch out their colors to black. The Nike guys and the guys that were getting money from other companies. Hey, do this for AI. Do this for AI. And they would, but it would, you had to do some negotiating. It'd be a little bit of a pain, but you did all these things for him. Like, Pat would always say, he's ours and we love him. And he was right.
The relationship between Larry and Alan, I mean, you had the front row seat for it. You know, Alan, I mean, he used to freak out. And then, of course, Larry would then berate Pat. Your boy, did this, he was late, he didn't like, show up, blah, blah, blah. And Pat was always in the middle. Pat had should have wore a fireman's hat, all the stuff he put out.
Oh, Billy put a lot of fires out, too.
I
will tell you this. All this stuff you're saying, yes, 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 but when the game was on the line, whose number did he call?
Oh, they was the best.
He could be pissed off at him at 10 o'clock in the morning, but around 9:15 at night, when it's late in the fourth quarter, he's calling the little guy's number to win the game.
There was love between the two. Like, there was the way it developed.
They're the same person. They're both competitors. They both wanted to win in the worst way. They just had different ways to go about it, and they had to find that common ground. And that's what building relationships is. You find that common ground, you build on it. It just took a lot of work to get there.
What were the games that you watched him and you marveled? When did you know that you went, oh, my God, this dude's special?
Well, you know, I mean, I had the best job in the world. I had a front row seat. I sat on the floor back then because I was younger. I was able to get up and down off the floor. I sat on the floor and I had a front row seat to watch this guy do his thing. And I got paid for it. He would go on those streaks where he would score 40 points a game. He would just take over in the fourth quarter, and the guys would yell, oh, he's putting them in the mix. He's putting them in the mixer. And just do his thing. And when I heard Phil Jackson say that he would pay to watch Allen Iverson play, that's a heck of a compliment.
Well, you remember the All-Star game, man. That was like the changing of the guard when he crosses over Jordan.
Oh, yeah, That was the home game.
Yes. Right? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean that.
But the All Star games, when he showed up, was the best. He showed up with all his buddies, and they were sitting there. Everybody else was wearing suit and tie, and he had The fatigue's on.
He did it his way. He always said he's going to do it his way, and he did it his way. He was his own person.
What was he, you know, the stories that come to mind, right? Like in game, when he got hot and he would just burn guys. Like, you know, again, fearlessness. And we were talking about this earlier, Scotty. We're talking to Scotty Rego, the equipment manager for the Sixers. For how long, Scott?
I think 29 years.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, just amazing. So we were talking about how he had to go up against the Shaqs, right? He had to go up against the Junkins, the Olajuwons. Like, he's going up against everybody had bigs, the Mutombos before he gets here. He's going up against all the Patrick Ewing, all the bigs of the league. And there were major rim protectors.
So the way I used to describe him, and I still will, he is a football player in a basketball player's body. He has that football player's mentality. I'm going to get hit. I know I'm going to get hit, and I'm going to get right back up.
You know, it was interesting, too. Some people have heard of him about it, but he was actually a great quarterback in high school.
We would go into San Antonio. They had the Alamo Dome was where they played at. So they had an indoor arena football team, I think, but they had a football field before you even got to the locker room. He found a football and was drilling guys 60, 70 yards out. From one end zone to the next, I think of an arena field is what? From end to end, like 70.
Yeah.
He was drilling them on a dime. And he threw one at me. I swear, I thought I broke my hand. It came out so fast and hard. He was just a natural athlete.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, man, because he could move. It's funny. He could have probably have been, you know, a really good NFL quarterback. He could, like, if he was had the coaching. Now, again, you got to go to practice. But if he had the coaching, and was open to it, he could have easily been an NFL quarterback, I think.
He could have done whatever he wanted to do. And I'll tell you what, if practices were scrimmages, and you said, hey, we're going to scrimmage for 2 hours a day. We're not going to stop anything except for maybe water breaks and a timeout game situation. He'd be there and want to practice more. He just wanted to play ball. He didn't take to the drills. And Larry was a perfectionist. Guys were getting the flow. He'd see one guy out of position. He'd stop practice. And guys, here we go. But that's how Larry coached. But when you talk to the guys today, they will tell you they learned so much. But going through it as a perfectionist was not easy for them to do. And a guy like Allen, all he wanted to do was play.
Yeah, he was almost, there was a simplicity about him. You know, like, he was just a simple dude. He loved the stage, and he loved to perform in front of people.
Oh, absolutely. He was built for the bright lights. I'll tell you a quick practice story that I do remember. Kevin Ollie would get up in his grill and guard him. I mean, in his face, pick him up end to end. And at one point, Allen just slammed the ball on the ground and looked and said, Kevin Ollie, you are making me a better basketball player.
Really?
Yeah.
KO, man.
Yeah. I mean, those practices when they did scrimmage, they went at it. Like, the team of the reserves, they didn't want to lose to the starters. They were games. They were, like, legit games, and they were fierce. And it was fun to watch because guys were competing. You know, they compete. You look at the guys today, they all love each other. They're all friends no matter what teams were or not. We had guys on our team that weren't friends with guys on other teams, and it was legit.
Yeah, they're one of the differences too. Like, there was a different type of. Now, I don't know if it's the AAU ball that has crept into it, because there's a lot of that. But the one thing about Allen is, like, Allen did, like, he wanted to win. Like, he was a even though he didn't win a title, he was a hate to lose kind of dude. Like, he was not a guy who accepted losing.
He didn't want to lose no matter what you were playing.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You're going to be playing Shaq.
Blu-ray.
Yeah, well, you got big money on the table with Blu-ray. That's a different story. we would be sitting on the tarmac waiting for the guys to end the card game so the bus could go to the hotel. Talk about some intense games there.
Oh, my God. The card games were insane. Well,
I heard you yesterday talking about the Bentley.
Oh, with the crabs? Oh, how great was that?
Let me give you two Bentley stories. He would pull up to practice and move my car, man. They're going to tow it. I'm in a bad spot. I'm right up front. He either give me or Al Lumpkin the keys, and one of us would get in the Bentley to move it. Every light would be on. Check engine, check the oil, blow this, blow that. And it would be a mess in there.
It would be a Christmas tree.
I thought I was in an airplane. Every light would be on that thing. And then one trip, we're going to New Jersey to play the Nets. And it's a bus trip. It's like an hour and a half ride. And he was coming from where he was living. And he pulled up in another car. Like, Chuck, everyone called him Chuck. Chuck, where's the Bentley? Oh, man, that thing broke down. That's smoking. You'll see it on the way. So we take 76, we take 76 West, and he goes, there it is. And on 76 East, the Bentley's just sitting there with smoke coming out of the hood.
Oh, my God.
Nobody in it waiting for a tow truck to come pick it up.
Oh, my God. It was just the Bentley was just sitting there on the side of the school.
Yeah.
Oh, that's classic. Oh, my. I got a good one, too, because I remember and they forgot where to park. They parked at the airport. And
this one.
They forgot the where they parked it. And
they forgot.
Went and bought a new one.
Yeah,
and then months later, they go, wait, this is your, they get contacted. This is your vehicle.
So, wait, I'll give you one better to that story. He plays a message on the speakerphone. There's like a landline speakerphone in the locker room at our practice site. He plays the message from his mom. We couldn't find where the car was parked. So we went and got a new navigator and we got red. I hope you like red. If you see it, it's our car.
Oh,
and they went and paid
God.
Cash for a new Lincoln Navigator Red. I think a couple months later, they contacted Billy and said, I think this belongs to one of your guys.
Oh, my God. That is just priceless. Oh, man.
Yeah, so not only did they not have the car, they went and bought a new one on the spot.
Yeah. How great was that? How about the Poom Poom Pants? Remember that? Oh, classic.
The guy was unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
But I'll tell you what. If you ask his teammates, the first thing they'll say is he was a great teammate to have. We were, as I told you yesterday, from top to bottom, we were a family. And he made sure.
Well, I want to ask you about that because he was a fiercely loyal guy to his teammates. And I know how much he loved you and he loved Pat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he was. You're loyal to him. He's loyal to you. He knew that he drove people crazy. He knew what he was doing. He would come into practice at late. I would have a whole section for him because I would just say, here, this is your section of sweats. You come in. I don't know where I'm going to be, whatever. And he would just wear a new sweatsuit every day. You know, he wore new game shorts every day. And we would play games or I'd play games with him. I had Reebok outfit him for a new pair of game shirts because Stern was on him about the shorts being above the knee.
Oh, yeah.
He wanted his shorts to be like a size 46, 48. He should have been a 36, let's say, because he's I had to make shorts with a bigger size tag in it and had them put a tag in it custom-made for Allen Iverson, even though he knew they were – he finally, like, caught on to it. And then what he would do is rip the sides of the shorts a little bit in case I tried to give him the same pair again.
Oh.
And we would go at it sometimes, like when the league was coming down enough.
Yeah, because they were so conscious about that nonsense. Like they were, right? Yeah. Like you had to hear battle. I mean, that was your job.
The league's not
part of your job. Yeah,
player. Yeah, they're not going to call the player. They're not going to call the uniform partner because they're getting millions and billions of dollars from them. They may send an email to the GM, but they're going to get a hold of the equipment guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what they do. And those are the fires you have to put out. There was one time we were in Detroit and the smoke and the fire was getting hot for the league. Like you had to get them into one game to kind of get the commissioner off his back a little bit. And so I had to stand my ground with him. He goes, well, you know what? Then I won't play. I said, all right, see you later.
Oh,
and I walked out of the locker room. He goes, where's he at? Where's Scotty Riggi at? He said, you're not playing. So, you know, I'm good. Everybody else is dressed. You're not playing, so we're good. He goes, give me those shorts, you little mother father.
Wait, Scotty, do me a favor. Just sit tight. I got to hear a couple more stories, all right? I want you to talk, because we didn't even talk about the season, the championship season. I got to take a quick timeout, all right?
Okay.
But stay with us, all right? Because I want you to tell more stories. And that year was such an amazing year. So let's talk about that, all right? So sit tight. We'll come back more with Scotty Riggi coming up, the former Sixers equipment man, all-around great guy, who lived this whole thing. And the stories are just endless, and they're so highly entertaining. It's Cuz Radio with the Tunis right here, 97.5 The Fanatic.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, welcome back. Cuz Radio Chewness. Going to be a steamy couple days. When it goes back, we're talking everything but the chip. And reliving those days. Sixers. AI. Fascinating stuff. Pat Croce and Larry Brown and the whole thing. And joining us, I had to just get, I just need more stories. We didn't even get to the season yet. We're just talking AI stories, which are just completely amazing. Former Sixers equipment manager, Scotty Riggi, who was you're basically the fly on the wall to this incredible show, privy to stuff that nobody else saw.
That's exactly how I would describe it. Can I just finish that Detroit story?
Yeah, please. I just want you to reset it too.
I was giving him shorts that he didn't want to wear because he never liked his knees showing. He always said his knees were ugly. And he never wanted to show them. So the league.
He had a knee issue? He thought his knees. AI? Thought his knees were ugly?
Oh, yeah, he did. It was just so funny.
How nuts is that? Like, think about that for a second.
That's how these guys are wired, though.
Right.
So to reset the story, the league was getting hot on him about wearing the shorts above the knee. I'm giving him shorts that are above the knee that he didn't want to wear, and he said he wouldn't play. So I said, okay, I took the shorts and walked out of the locker room. Then he started yelling, looking for me. You know, I wasn't coming back. And he said, give me the shorts, you little mother father. He goes out. He has a great game. And then later on, Aaron McKee, George Lynch, Theo Ratliff, Matt Gart, keep pissing him off. We go, keep him off before games. We need that. I'm like, are you kidding me? So I go to Billy. I'm like, I need hazard pay for this guy.
Really? It's the truth.
I'm like, oh, dude, keep getting mad. If he got mad before a game, whether he was arguing with somebody at home or whatever, he was going to go out and light it up.
Was that part of what was the what do you think Larry Brown's aim was with Allen? Was it just try to corral him a little bit, mold him a little? Like what do you think ultimately his aim was?
Well, Larry was a teacher, still is, and he'd be the first to tell you that he would rather practice than play games because he gets to teach. And I think the way Allen was, he just wanted to fly up and down the court. He didn't allow Larry to teach him the way Larry likes to teach. And you got to be a certain player to accept that, too. And I think he does have, you know, Larry play the right way. They play the right way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and the style of basketball was changing at that time. But Larry went right along with it. At some point when they had the meeting of the minds, they actually just kind of figured out that they were the same person. And I don't think they knew that until that time.
Yeah, I remember that too. Because, listen, Larry in his own right was a little high maintenance. You know, I remember Pat telling me, we got to stay in a certain hotel. Larry has to have his, you know, his dinners. You know, like there was, listen, he was a regal coach. But he actually found, for a guy like Larry Brown, who I know you were very close with, who was a guy who was an NBA vagabond, right? Like he was a guy that was go from town to town. And he actually settled in Philadelphia.
I think this was his longest stay, job-wise. And also, he built the life here. He lived here for a while after he was done with the Sixers. He actually came back as an advisor for a season or two. But he was a guy, and I always say he's like a second father to me. He looked out for everyone on the staff. And people respected him, but he made sure they respected you, too. He one time told me, he said, if I show you respect in front of the players, then they'll respect you. He goes, if I walk all over you, then they're going to walk all over you. Mm. And I can't have that. But, yes, the dinners, some of these dinners were legendary. If you want to go into the season a little bit, when we play Indiana in the first round, the last game of the season was against Indiana in Indiana. So we have this whole team dinner. We decided to go. There's no restaurants at the time in Indiana, so we go to Buca di Beppo, right? Now, he's ordering the best wine. Like, they're running to the store to get wine that's not on the wine list because we have all these people here. And, you know, we know we're playing them, and we win, okay? And we played, like, Roger Bell, Jermaine Jones. We sat our guys because the seating was where it was. Well, now we go back to Indy 1-1. And remember, it was a best of five in the first round. So yeah. Upsets were easier than the seven games.
We lost. I remember it was the same day of the NFL draft. It was a Saturday.
Mm-hmm. It was an afternoon game.
Yes, yes, yes. So
Reggie Miller comes around and hits that three. And every member of the Sixers support staff or front office staff wound up at the Happy Rooster till about 2 in the morning. Don't know how anyone made it into work the next day. But we go back to Indy 1-1. Guess where we go? Everyone goes out to eat at Buca di Beppo again in the same seats. We order the same food. They're finding the wine for them. These guys, Alan was superstitious. Larry was superstitious. And he had an acid reflux problem. I turned to Billy. I'm like, hope Coach doesn't get acid reflux from all this food and wine we're having.
Because he was in the hospital for a little bit with that.
I don't know if he's in the hospital, but he saw some doctors for it. But we win game that game. Now we're up 2-1. Guess where we go back to dinner again the night before? Back to Buca di Beppo. It was but he grabbed my hand before the last game of the season. I sat next to him, and he goes, "Scotty boy, if we get past these guys, the rest is going to be gravy." He knew that we could get through the East.
Wow.
I never told anyone he said that to me.
That's wild.
Grab, put his hand on top of mine like a father with a son and said, the rest will be gravy.
So let's start that year because the year was amazing, right? You get off to this incredible start, 41-14. And did you know, before we get to the trade, did everybody started to feel like, oh my God, this year could be special?
I'll go to the very first game. We're in New York and Tony Kukoc is still on the team. He runs for a ball that's going out of bounds, gets it, makes a steal, grabs the ball. His foot stays in bounds right in front of our bench. It's a big hustle play at a crucial point in the game. He turns to our bench before he throws it down court and goes, this is no longer preseason. And just the bench goes wild. We made
wow.
The bench went nuts. We go on a winning streak. Yeah. We go on that 10-game winning streak, and there was, I guess it was inside stuff, or somebody was mic'd up for something, and Eric Snow was mic'd up, and he's like, this team could be pretty darn good. And people start to realize it, yeah. We start to realize that you can start out 10-0. That's no joke.
And so Theo gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such an interesting time because there was a lot of debate. Well, would he be able to come back in time for the playoffs? What do you do, right? Do you go after somebody? Because what if you do have to play the Lakers and Shaq, right? Like, you know, who's guard Shaq, that type of thing?
Theo, I know he wanted to come back in the worst way. And I know he was trying to do everything he could to come back probably earlier than he should have. He was the one guy I loved to watch play because he wanted a triple-double every night. He wanted 10 blocks a night, and he wanted to try to get a triple-double with blocks. And it was just, he looked like a praying mantis out there when he was on top of the game, just stretching out there. When they coached that All-Star game, I turned to a friend of mine. I said, oh, boy, coach is going to try to go after Dikembe. What did he have, 20 rebounds in an All-Star game?
Not knowing
that they had, like, mentioned him before. Those are conversations you don't hear. But I was like, Larry's going to fall in love with this guy. He's going to go after Billy every day to get him. I don't think Theo would have been ready for the playoffs. So you needed to do something.
Yeah. Yeah, what was Mutombo like?
Oh, God, so fun. You ever see a 7-foot guy do the running man in the locker room? He would just come in with that deep voice. Nobody talks about Dikembe without doing the voice, but he would just come in with the deep voice.
Knock at my house.
Scotty, I need some socks, my brother. Everybody was my brother. But he was good for Allen, too. He was good to talk to him. He would pull Allen aside when he needed to pull him aside. He was a good presence in the locker room. Just a great guy, though. Like I said, he fit, as far as the locker room went, he fit right in. We were a family. He was a part of it.
Yeah, and now let's go to the playoffs. So let's go through it, right? So you were at Indiana, and you have two amazing series, like just incredible series, right?
They were Milwaukee and Toronto. Toronto was on the documentary is built as Allen and Vince, but the supporting cast for both teams, I still see Del Curry on the sidelines just hitting a baseline jumper. He would just run a fade to the left corner every time. It seemed like he never missed. And I never seen Antonio Davis score so many points a game in my life playing for Toronto.
Yeah.
It was just, a dogfight from beginning to end, and that place gets loud up there.
That whole, the North, we the North, and that all started during that thing. It's a great sports town. We're talking to Scotty Rego, former Sixers equipment manager, as we relive everything but the chip. He had a front row seat to it all. And then, of course, it goes from, and that shot, I mean, talk about holding your breath.
Every time I see it, I still think it's going in. Even last night, it looks good. It's one of those things. He got the shot. Everyone knew he was getting the ball, and he was able to get a good look, and he just missed it. I don't think it had anything to do with him going to the graduation. I just think he just missed a shot.
Yeah.
It's just something that'll be etched in your mind forever. It was an unbelievable feeling to get past that. Like I said, those games were dogfights. Every single one. And they were battles. They were pure battles.
I'm thinking about your career, man. And we're talking about that series in Toronto. You're also in the series in Toronto in the Game 7 more recently with Kawhi's triple doink.
Yeah, I witnessed that one too. I honestly think, that doesn't go in. We win the game. We probably win the whole thing that year.
Yeah, I do too. I agree. Now, what about Milwaukee? Because Milwaukee, it was funny. As you know, I was very close with Pat, and we would go. I would go on the trip with Pat, like on the plane.
Oh, I know.
And then we would. I never forget. Milwaukee was a nasty place, man. There was a great rivalry between Sixers and Bucks.
They had a loaded team too. Sam Cassell, Big Dog, Ray Allen. Yeah, they had the best was they had Scott Williams. Remember Scott Williams would get booed on his way going into the game for the Sixers. Now he was a backup for Milwaukee.
Scotty,
they booed him even louder back in Philly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, think about it. Big Dog missed a bunny in Philly. Could have changed the whole series.
The whole series.
Missed a layup.
Yeah.
Don't know how that thing did not go in, but it didn't go in. Somebody was watching us from above. Sometimes you have to be more lucky than good. And we were. But, I mean, we had heart. And it started with Allen. You could not measure this guy's heart.
That was the one thing he loved to play, man. He loved. And speaking of heart, I mean, go back to since. All right, so let's take it from there. You beat the Bucks, and it's like, all right, finals, Lakers. And what's everybody doing then? Because they were the mighty Lakers. They were Shaq, Kobe Lakers. What was the vibe going into it?
I mean, listen, I'm not making excuses. We limped into that series.
Aaron, George Lynch, everybody was banged up.
But we weren't feeling sorry for ourselves. We were going in there to win it. I mean, that was the vibe. We're going to win the championship. We don't care who we're playing. They didn't care who they were playing. And, you know, we could have won game two. We missed some free throws, and Brian Shaw. Brian Shaw hits an open three. Every time I see him, he was coaching Denver for a little bit, but you owe me a ring. He hit a wide open three, and it brought them all the way back. We had a chance to win game two as well. Nobody was feeling sorry for anybody. Hurt or not. I mean, everyone's hurt that time of year.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Game one was amazing, though. Come on. Game one.
Amazing.
No one thought that they had a prayer, that the Sixers had a prayer. And the next thing you know, what happened? It was one of the greatest moments ever. And then they step over. Like, what's the bench like there? What's going on after game one and during that whole thing?
You talk about guys jumping up and down and pure joy and elation. It's like, you know, everyone's pumping their chest and pumping their fists. It's like, yeah, we can do this. We could beat this team here and, you know, get home court advantage. Then when he steps over Lou, everyone's like, holy cow. They didn't say cow. They're like, what just happened? And, you know, we had a mural of that in the practice facility. And I think when they were bringing, if they were going to bring Ty Lue, and I don't know if they ever did, but if they're ever going to bring him in to coach the team for an interview, I was like, you better cover that sting up.
God.
It was just, you know, watching it, I could tell you that was the best time of my career there, going through that whole time, that whole season, that whole run, you know. It was just an unbelievable feeling. But, you know, going to L.A. and winning that game and thinking, hey, you got a chance, and we did. But Larry's always said he would have loved to see what our chances were if everybody was healthy on our team.
Yeah. And from there, it's a shame because that was the pinnacle. And I keep going back. We're talking to Scotty Rego, former Sixers equipment manager, who lived that whole period of time that the subject of the NBA TV documentary, you can go on demand and watch it, Everything But the Chip. It's really cool. But one of the things that it's a shame is that it ended so abruptly. Like the Sixers as a true contender ended that with that run. Because then, you know, Pat's kind of forced out and that ends. And then the team itself just was never good enough, never the same.
It was never the same. And you remember, some guys had surgeries right before training camp started. And I think some guys had to have their surgeries delayed because they were in New York and 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
You know, it just, you know, we started this season, I think, with the Kembe Mutombo and Derek Coleman in your front court. Like you don't have any speed there. I think
Matt Harper too. It was the slowest front court. I always talk about it. The slowest front court ever. And it was so not Iverson. They never, the shame. Listen, I love Larry. Larry was an amazing coach, Hall of Famer, the whole thing. But he sometimes was his own worst enemy. Because if you get Pierce, it's a whole different story.
It is a whole different story. And who knows what would have happened. But, you know, look at the Phillies, right? Look what the Phillies are doing now. And they had that run last year. And I keep thinking, people, oh, this is what we did last year, Well, we've been talking about, oh, yeah, last year we're in the finals. Then the next year, we were in the finals 2 years ago. This is what happens, what we did. And now it's 20-something years later. Oh, yeah, we were in the finals 20 years ago. Oh, well, the game has changed. Like, you know, and you can't have the Phillies talking about last year.
Yeah.
Because that may not happen. You can't get caught up in like what you did the year before. It has to start new, a new mentality. You got to clear your mind of it. I mean, look, it took the Eagles 5 years to get back to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. And the other shame, too, of Iverson is that it then starts to turn. It unravels. And you saw it firsthand to the point where there's clamoring to trade him. And it's almost like what's happening now with Embiid, which is a shame.
Yeah, there's different versions of the story of when Allen went to Denver, if it was the right time or not. I think now everybody would probably agree it may have been. It wasn't, no one wants it to end the way it ended, and he came back to finish out his career here for that half the season he was here. I think Eddie Jordan was our coach.
Yeah.
But yeah, it wasn't fun. It wasn't easy to watch. But there's nothing, you could do about it. You just try to keep everybody up. You try to keep him up, his spirits up, and everyone else around you up. That's what a support staff does.
I'll ask you one thing. I'm sorry. I'll ask you one thing, and then you got to tell me what you're doing now. And then we thank you for your time. But can Joel win a title? You know Joe better than a lot of people. You saw him grow, from this incredible just talent who was injured, and you've seen his growth. Can Joe win?
Yes, I think he can win for sure, and I know he wants to. The most important growth I've seen with Joel, I've seen him turn from a young man into a father. And that's been, for me, that's been the most satisfying growth to see him in, because you always want these guys to be better people when they leave. If you get a chance to touch them as someone, they come and talk to as a trusted figure, to me, that's been the best transformation I've seen of him. Absolutely, I think he can win. Why can't he? The guy was the MVP. How can he not win? I think they're just, they know what they need to do over there to get them over the hump, and I'm sure they're going to try to do everything they can.
Yeah. Hey, what are you doing now, buddy?
I'm working in real estate now. Working for Compass. If anybody wants to buy your house or whatever, sell a house.
Here you go, buddy.
Yeah, I do have
a... You never know where the lead comes from.
I never know, and you're a great platform for me. I do have a passion project, though. I am meeting with some people about a podcast. And this was a great foray. I wanted to talk about experiences like this that I've had over the years, but I want the player that was involved in the story on the podcast with me. We could have their point of view and my point of view, and I think it would be really, really good.
Yeah, that's fabulous. That guess what? You see it. People love it. They love it. I love it. We love to hear this stuff because you're taking us, behind the curtain, right? You're taking us into what really happened during a momentous time in Philadelphia.
Like you said, I was a fly on the wall of, just a kid from South Philly, happened to get a job with the team, and I stayed. John Sally used to say, stay as long as until they kick you out. That's exactly what I did. And it's been a great ride and a great run. And like I said, that time was the best time of my career.
That's awesome, dude. That's fabulous. Listen, thank you so much for hanging out with us, buddy.
Oh, I enjoyed it.
We appreciate it. So much fun, man. Really, really great stuff. It's Scotty Rego, former equipment manager for the Sixers, taking some time to share with us some stories from that incredible run. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Talk soon.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.